Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs. You're joined at the top of the show by my co-host, Evan Damerel. Evan, what's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot, you know, but I was wondering, I have a joke for you. What do you get when you cross a 67-year-old rookie head coach with a team who ignores him and treats him like trash? The Cavs get what they fucking deserve.
That's all coming up on today's episode of Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
Come on!
Okay, Evan, as the listeners surely know by now, if they didn't, they know now. But John Beilein is all but officially gone from the Cavs. So timestamping this, we are recording this on Tuesday, February 18th at 7:14 p.m. Basically, as we understand it right now, according to The Athletic, they are in, as first reported by The Athletic, they are in advanced talks for Beilein to step down. Basically, this would mean that he is going to take his money or give up his money from the team, walk away from this for all the reasons that we talked about with Jordan Zerm the other day. That is, you can go read about right now, everything that is out there. This is just the next logical step in that process. John Beilein, again, by all accounts, is going to not be the Cavs coach as early as I think Wednesday morning. That is the indication I have gotten from poking around on this. I don't think he can. We were talking earlier, and they have practice tomorrow, but they haven't had like a media availability kind of in regards to it. And I think this is probably partially why, it would be my guess, is they're trying to figure out what the actual F is going on in this regard. But what do you make of this kind of latest development in the Beilein saga? What sticks out to you in terms of how this is playing out?
I've been anxiously waiting for the other shoe to drop in this situation all damn day, and then it hits 8 o'clock, I think, is when it finally dropped, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess this is the next logical step, like you said, but at the same time, it is just so frustrating because it feels like such a cut-and-dry decision that Beilein has made it increasingly clear as the more reports come out from this, whether it's Adrian Wojnarowski, who has a personal connection with Beilein, I think it's a little bit more viewed in that scope and that lens, or you have The Athletic, who, if Joe Vardon, who has contributed to these reports, and Kelsey Russo and Jason Lloyd, who are all a little bit better connected than you and I are, at least when it comes to the roster and like everything, and Shams Charania is a big agent guy as well, so like that's probably looking from the roster's perspective, but like there's so much external pressure on the Cavs when this first dropped Sunday night, and we're recording this on a Tuesday, that I felt like Monday it should have happened, and I was surprised it didn't. But like they said, he was meeting with Dan Gilbert, according to reports, which, fine, whatever. If you like, you'd want to make a last gasp effort to have Dan try and convince Beilein to stay for, I don't know what reason, just for 28 games, just to show him out the door at the end of the season, whatever. But it was so clear at this point that I think that's what I'm frustrated with, is like this could have just been easily taken care of and we can move on, but it feels like the Cavs are just doing this in the most Cavs way and obtuse way possible.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the 28 games thing is sort of just like kind of trying to get through the rest of the season without like a changeover. I mean, it would have been completely beyond, it would have just been beyond awkward for him to coach another game. At this point, like it's just kind of untenable. Like I don't, you know, and if he is the one kind of pushing his way out, like kind of being like, hey, I want out, I want to be done here, that says a lot to me. You know, that to me is very, very telling. So I think it speaks volumes to like how much he seemingly does not want to be doing this job anymore, that he's leaving all that money on the table. No, again, John Beilein like has money. It's not like this is like the first big time paying job he has. I don't know. I think he made like at least $1 million a year in Michigan, or if not very close to it. That's public record. I could go look that up. I probably will when you start talking. But when I think about him giving up that much money and walking away and like this, you know, I don't know what's like next for him. And like sort of this kind of being such a big cloud on whatever he does next, like that, this decision could not have been made lately. For him to do this, that to me is just like, okay, he's clearly just miserable. This is clearly just, he sees no path to make this work. And it's just, again, I think it's, again, I said this the other day, it's better for everyone involved just to get this done. And I think it's better if it just happens now. And if, but it does speak just a lot of volumes that like he's going to give up all that money.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because I was on the phone with my dad when the news dropped, because usually I try to check in with my parents once or twice a week just to see how they're doing and everything, because they're getting up there in the late 50s, early 60s. And he's just like, yeah, this Cavs coach isn't going to pull the plug, is he? And I'm like, oh, no, he did. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, he left $14 million on the table. And my dad says, wow, he hated coaching this team so much that he's willing to leave $14 million on the table. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty remarkable that he was able to do that. And this is just based on what The Athletic has said, and I'm trying to vet those sources as well, or vet those numbers as well, just to make sure they're accurate, because I don't know if I do a story on this, I'd rather be able to confirm it myself than based off somebody else's report, because whatever. But I'm just, it's just like, it's just been a weird situation overall. Like, I think the timing of it was weird. I can't even tell you the last time off the top of my head a coach, a rookie coach, just said, I'm done, like midway through the season. And it just, it felt like it was going to be an inevitable thing at this point in the year. And I'm just kind of like ready and kind of cautiously interested to see what the next step is for these next 28 games with JB Bickerstaff at the helm.
Yeah, we'll talk about Bickerstaff in the next segment. I'll be joined later by Mark King. We've heard on the show before, host Locked On Grizzlies, to talk about Bickerstaff. He's not a, just a spoiler, he's not a particularly big fan of Bickerstaff. So kind of that's a thing we'll certainly get into.
And I don't think any Grizzly fans are fans of Bickerstaff. Amy Stigemeyer on Twitter at Hoop City Hellcat quote retweeted me and said, where can I send the booze you're going to need to get through this experience? So those are really ringing words of endorsement there.
Yeah, it's not the vibes you get it from like people on Twitter are not obviously everything, but you know, that they certainly can, they certainly will offer, I think, some good insight. And I for whatever it's worth, I know for he did very much impress the Cavs in his hiring process, and there's all this stuff out there about there being a succession plan in place and everything. So, you know, like the Cavs clearly like him, and, you know, maybe it'll work. Who freaking knows? No one really, I don't know anything. We'll wrap up the first segment of the seven. What do you think's weirder, this or the how the Larry Drew stuff played out last year?
Probably this, because Larry Drew, like, I get it. He, so you're saying the Larry Drew situation playing out like after Ty was fired, or more?
Yeah, and him being like the voice of the team, but like not having the job, and then like a month later being like, I don't ever want to be a head coach again. I'm like, this is miserable. Like that, just whole month to me, like, is probably what I'm referring to more than anything else.
Yeah, no, now I'm smelling what you're stepping in a little bit here. I still say the Bayline thing, because maybe Larry Drew is a precursor at this point, because maybe this Cavs team, just the way it's currently constructed and the way it's run, and the fact that it's just a leaking ship on a ship that has no rudder in the middle of the ocean, just kind of sucks the soul out of whoever coaches it. And maybe JB Bickerstaff's the next guy, but I really hope he's not the next victim, because seven coaches in the last decade, Chris, and that's not
7 years.
Yeah, two of those were Mike Brown, granted, but 6 and 7 years. It's just absolutely incredible that this team cannot get out of its own way. And I genuinely hope, like, by all reports, JB Bickerstaff, and we're going to talk on this more in a second, it seems kind of meh, but I just hope, like, he can stick around for 2, 3, maybe even 4 years, and just kind of the Cavs could be a normal milquetoast team that I don't have to get annoyed with when something's stupid. A 14-win team shouldn't be showing up in the news for all the wrong reasons. Like, if it should be, like I said, happy stories about these young guys looking good, or Kevin Love is just, you know, watching movies that should have won Picture of the Year and whatnot.
Okay, we're done with this bit. I'm over it. Joker sucks.
Okay. All right. So, well, I guess what your question, let me bounce this question back to you. What do you think was weirder, Larry Drew or John Beilein?
I think John Beilein, because I can't think of anything in sports. I'm 26, and I can't think of anything ever like this happening.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Because to be fair to Drew, he looked like he was asleep at the wheel pretty fast with this situation, especially when
that roster was worse. To his credit, that roster was worse. And I do know that, like, amid everything else, like guys like Tristan and stuff respected him. And while I don't think Tristan is like the source of the malcontent this year, I do think that like Larry probably had a higher degree of respect in the locker room. And I think that like you could get through a year with Larry Drew. Like Larry Drew's probably the guy for, like, I don't mean this even as a bad thing. Like, I think Larry, you know, being that guy, you know, certainly I think part of the reason why you're able to get through last year, that just wasn't the case with John probably. You know, I don't know, like, again, like the player stuff about this and all that stuff, like we'll probably get like 50% of the truth, but like, you know, it's certainly, I think it's just, I can't think of anything quite like this ever happening in sports where like a guy who was so successful at every level. And then, it just
didn't like, work.
Totally blew up.
It ended in, like, the success rate isn't great for college coaches transitioning to the NBA. Granted, like, Brad Stevens is a good recent example. Billy Donovan is really turning things around in Oklahoma City right now since Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook left town, and they're kind of playing more of a team-oriented, ball-moving offense. But the success rate wasn't great for college coaches, and there was definitely that concern with Beilein coming into the system, but they really, this fell apart in the most Cavaliers way possible, where like everything that could have gone wrong this season and what has turning into a very weird season has gone wrong for the Cavs.
Yeah, it's all sort of just been really bad. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then Evan and I are going to be back to talk about sort of what we expect from the franchise, sort of what we expect from JB Bickerstaff, and we'll be back with more on this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. Evan, we are back. Okay, I'm going to let you kind of choose your own adventure here. Do you want to start? We'll do a couple minutes on each. What are you expecting out of Bickerstaff? Or what do you want to, what would you like the Cavs to, how do you want the Cavs to sort of approach what is next? Where do you want to start? And we'll talk about all of this listeners more like in the coming days.
We'll get a raw reaction.
Yeah, we'll see what happens Wednesday. You know, the award show will actually go up, even though that'll feel weird at this point. But there is more to come. But just initial gut reaction, what do you want to talk about first?
What we should expect from JB Bickerstaff.
Maybe Yoda, Cavs head coach. Make it happen.
Sure, why not? Just, you know what, try everything. If you want to get cute with it, get really cute with it.
No one could hate him, and then it would just it'd be like good for the culture. Never.
Yeah, you look like a real mega asshole if you hated Baby Yoda. So yeah,
Kevin Love's like, Baby Yoda, find me, I'm rich. And Baby Yoda be like, would just be cooing at him. It'd be incredible. Cavs would win the PR battle, but you know, alas, continue.
I mean, if you remember, like when Baby Yoda first had to use the Force, like he really use the Force, so he could use that on Kevin Love. But let's focus back on this. What should we expect from a JB Bickerstaff led Cavaliers team with the remaining 28 games? And based on reports and kind of based on what I heard, he is Cleveland's head coach going forward. So yep. I'm assuming he's going to be here for the next few years. So I guess just we can touch on these next 28 games, and I think maybe we could reevaluate this at the end of the season. We have a larger sample size, but I'm just hoping, I'm expecting things to kind of remain the same on the court, offensively and defensively. To be fair, JB was Cleveland's defensive coordinator, quote unquote, so probably going to see a lot more of the same. Maybe a little bit more competency in the offensive systems, and maybe it's a little bit more fast-paced, but I don't really expect a lot on the court to change. I expect there to be a lot of losses, especially if Kevin Love's Achilles injury. Actually, I have a feeling that Kevin Love's Achilles started hurting a lot more with this news. So it's going to be ugly basketball, but I'm just hoping for like some stability, some normalcy. And as much in cliche as it sounds, I'd like the Cavs to have some semblance of like a culture, quote unquote, for these young guys to kind of thrive and develop in, and that these veterans aren't absolutely miserable to be a part of, so that
Cleveland is in an absolute dumpster fire next year, so when JB gets a full season under his belt, at least he's establishing what is expected and what isn't expected of this team going forward. That's kind of what I'm looking for. And then maybe just some flashes from the young guys in terms of player development. That's always just a nice thing, especially when you're in the Renaissance. Maybe they're in the Enlightenment now, but...
You can't be in the Enlightenment where... Well, like me, we won't know if they're in the Enlightenment until like next season.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Hey, maybe they went back from the Renaissance to the dark, and they're going from the Dark Ages and just working backwards. Maybe they're going to go back until the Cavs find fire, and that's when the rebuild actually begins. But that's just kind of what I'm expecting right now. What about you? And then we can touch on kind of hopefully what we're expecting or maybe have high hopes for.
So this is a teaser for the ineligible Cleveland newsletter that will be out by the time you can subscribe to the link below and everything. But like, I think the Cavs just like, I want to see if they can take a step towards being normal.
That's like, a big ask.
They need to like just admit that it's okay to be normal. You know, like they've just had a bizarre year. I mean, you could run through the list of stuff that has happened and it's just like sort of mind boggling, you know, like it is the amount of stuff and wackiness that has happened to an organization that like some teams go a whole year without having, and like that this shouldn't be sort of our expectation for a Cavs season. That's really, really bad that is sort of their normal. You know, I don't think like everyone they have is, you know, unintelligent. I think they have a lot of very smart people that are could be better at their jobs in certain situations. I think there's stuff to like about, you know, what the organization is doing. You know, that being said, I look at this and I just want to see if they can find a way to just kind of get through the rest of the year, see some improvements and kind of make things, you know, work a little bit better. That just hasn't ever been the MO. But if they can do that under Bickerstaff and he can kind of shepherd that, that would be kind of a big thing for the team and him. I want to see what kind of buy-in he gets from guys, you know, how much Kevin Love plays. And like, I would just like, I don't want to dive into this because we've talked about this like every episode lately. But I think it would do a lot of good from just because I have questions, because I think every media member with a pulse has questions for him, because I think it would do one, it would be a smart thing for the fan base. Like Kobe Altman just should do like an in-person press conference. I don't think he spoke to the media at large, like all the whole contingent since like the beginning of end of last season, maybe like, or the Beeline hire, something like that. It's way overdue. You kind of need to do that. Like, it would be very weird to me if like he is not speaking in some way come Wednesday, come Thursday, as soon as possible. I think it's just beyond necessary at this point. You know, and not like a 12-minute capped conference call, like an actual media appearance, I think would be really interesting. That's what I would say in the short term. And then it's for Bickerstaff, it's like get through the rest of the year, show progress, get good buy-in from guys, and
maybe reassure these fans and journalists that you're not as bad as people make you out to be.
Yeah, and I think I would just like to get a feel for what he's going to be as a head coach, because like I don't like his roster in Memphis. You know, wasn't great.
No,
you know, like it's a weird. There's a lot of like that all kind of matters. This roster isn't great, but how he approaches it, and what adjustments he would make and things like. I just want to see what he would do.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think the Kobe thing, that might be wishful thinking just for the short term. I do wonder if this news does drop tomorrow, because you and I both agree that the Cavs cannot let this drag out any further. Like, they have to just make a formal announcement through to the press and to everyone else that this is over and that JB is the new head coach. And I think maybe then like they say like, okay, well, Kobe Altman's going to do like an impromptu media availability because Cleveland's supposed to practice tomorrow. And I wonder, instead of speaking to the players, and maybe they let the media speak to JB Bickerstaff, maybe instead of in lieu of that, like they just let Kobe Altman just kind of take the heat for just kind of what went wrong and where does Cleveland go from here? And I know Kobe kind of matches the attitude of the Cavs, where he is overwhelmingly positive based on like what I've interacted with him and what I've just seen him and listened to him, where he is the only guy I think who was excited and optimistic after the Cavs finished the season 19-63 last year, and it was kind of refreshing to hear that. But maybe that's just more of the Cavs MO at this point, where they try to pretend everything's okay when it actually isn't. So I think, yeah, like what Zerm said, maybe the media, ourselves included, just maybe needs to be a little bit harder on Kobe about this, because
based on what's been reported, it's kind of up in the air. Like, this could have been a Dan Gilbert hire with John Beilein. This could have been Kobe Altman and Mike Gansey falling in love with him at a, well, Kobe falling in love with him at a wedding and Gansey kind of pushing the issue. Like, we don't really know who actually made the final decision on John Beilein being the head coach. But after Dan had the stroke, we know for a fact that Kobe is largely running this organization and checking in with Dan for major decisions. Like with the Slugs versus Thugs thing, Kobe checked in with Dan just based on what they should do before he kind of launched his own internal investigation. And it, you know, I think he kind of needs to be held accountable because he is largely a decision maker and he's the one who's shaping this team. And shout out to our guy Spencer Davies, but this is year 1B of the rebuild, and I don't think Cleveland can afford to enter year 1C of the rebuild if they mess this up in such spectacular fashion that it's just going to keep setting them back further and further.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I think there's just a lot. I mean, we haven't really heard JB talk very much this year. I'll be curious to see what he's kind of thought of the year. You know, he's going to be a blank canvas in a lot of ways. So, like, I think that is going to be a really interesting kind of thing there. There's just a lot still to unpack here. I hope it happens. I think it'd be better for the Cavs if they move past it faster than not, right? Like, I think it would be healthier for them if it's like they can just get this sort of done in the next 48 hours and just trying to move on. You know, like the stench of the Beilein thing is probably not going to be gone all the way. You know, I wonder, I would be very curious to see how other coaches kind of view that and stuff, but you know, I'm sure every coach in the league will be asked about it in some way. And like, it's not like they fired, like there was the outcry when they fired Ty among other coaches and stuff. And I don't think this will be that, but I wonder what the reception will be. I'll be curious to see what the players have to say. I know, like, you know, again, we've talked about this, but like Larry Nance had a good, has a good relationship with him. You know, other guys certainly don't have that same kind of quality rapport with Beilein. So, you know, I wonder what the adjustment's going to look like. I don't really know if there's any downside to this. Like, I've been thinking about that a lot in the last 2 days, and like, I don't know what the downside would be it to Beilein. Like, aside from just like having to adjust midseason, that's like the big downside. I don't really see any others. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's just, I don't really know if there's going to be much of an adjustment because I don't know if Beilein really installed a lot of his offensive sets and like his identity, and the Cavs, from what I've heard, have been largely running just kind of a vanilla basic NBA offensive sets. And maybe the Cavs, you know, that's it. Like, this is a good segue to lead in like maybe what we'd like to see. And if that's the case, if Bickerstaff kind of like wants to just mix things up a bit for the next 28 games, and then that leads into next season, one of the biggest things I'd like to see is running more of a pick-and-roll heavy offense. You have Andre Drummond, who is a good pick-and-roll center, and he's a great lob threat and pass threat for your younger guards. And you just kind of start to see if Sexton and Garland and Dante Exum are comfortable in that situation. I think Exum is more so comfortable than the other two just because of experience. And then maybe you have Delly, who gets incorporated a little bit as well because he's a good lob passer as well. And just like running a bit more of just like a, again, it's a basic NBA offense, but at least it makes a little bit more sense than what Cleveland was running at this point. And I mean, there were some things in Beilein's offense, quote unquote, that worked, and I'd be okay with just cleaving a little bit of that, but just kind of mixing things up. And you kind of start to see and like test your young guards to kind of figure out what you do and don't have so that you can kind of reevaluate with a little bit of a sample size based on that, just instead of kind of what Cleveland's been running to this point. And I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at this point. What about you, buddy? What are you thinking you'd like to hopefully see the Cavs incorporate under Bickerstaff?
You know, I guess my biggest thing is what his approach is to some of the three-point stuff we've seen. Like, I know it was a thing with Memphis, and we're going to talk about that with Mark King about, you know, what worked and didn't work with, like, him and Jaren Jackson Jr. and stuff like that. So I'll be curious to see how he approaches that. I'll be curious to see, you know, sort of what kind of rotation changes he might make in. I'll be curious to see what this means for Andre Drummond. I mean, you got to remember, like, one of the things we haven't talked about really yet is that Drummond has played 2 games with the team, and like now he's got a second head coach.
Yeah, that's
kind of wild,
dude. It feels so long ago when the Cavs traded for Drummond, and like there was actual palpable excitement when you and I were talking about it.
Now it feels kinda like 3 months ago, you know, like, which is wild.
like, in the words of songsmith Kanye West, it's, I have gray in my beard and it's been a shaky-ass year so far for the Cavs, and it's, we're only barely 2 months into 2020, and I love it so much.
Yeah, it's kind of not what you want.
No, it's really not, and I think I agree with you the more and more I think about it, and something I've always been an big advocate of is I just want some normalcy. I kind of would be more than okay with the Cavs just kind of sitting on the back burner. It hurts my content, like, in terms of writing and stuff, but I'm okay with that if it doesn't, like, because I'll be honest with everyone who's listening, I'm a fan of this team quite a bit, and when they keep doing these frustrating things and they kind of can't get out of their own way, it just bums me out, and it just makes me annoyed, because you start to think, like, is this just always how it's going to be with the Cavs until LeBron shows up again and just drags this team to the NBA Finals? But I don't want that to be the case, and I just kind of want things to be quiet for a little bit just so I can catch my breath and just kind of be over this.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I think that has to be kind of where we go from here and kind of getting through whatever is exactly next, and we'll kind of see exactly what happens next 24, 48 hours. Again, by the time, but between when we've recorded this and what could come next, like, these things could very well change, and that's the nature of just kind of the situation the Cavs are in. Evan, any final thoughts as we get out of here?
No, not really. I'm just kind of, I'm over this situation. I'm ready just to move on and move past this. It's been a very weird season, like I keep saying, in Cavalier standards, and hopefully they get out of their own way at this point. But I'm just kind of ready to move on and just hopefully find some semblance of normalcy for once in my life. What about you, bud?
Yeah, I want this. I want to see how this progresses. I want to. I mean, they have a tough road back to back this weekend.
Oh, it's brutal.
Like Washington and then Miami, and then play Miami again on Monday, and then you play Philly. Like, this is going to get a little bit tougher before I think it gets better. And I want to see how they handle it and how Bickerstaff approaches it. It's going to be really, really interesting to kind of see what that all looks like. So I don't know exactly, you know, I don't think there's like a clear way forward here, but I'm curious to see sort of what the vibe is and how everything just kind of feels. And I don't really know, but it's going to, I think the first week is going to be pretty rough, and where it goes from there is going to be really interesting.
I think you and I both are hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. It's a good way to wrap this mother up.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. So now coming up, myself talking to Mark King from Lockdown Grizzlies about JB Bickerstaff, the presumed, if not already, Cleveland Cavaliers head coach. That's coming up right after this break. I'm joined now by Mark King, host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. If you want to hear like a fun basketball conversation, go check out my talking with him about the Grizzlies and about what's going on in Memphis. But how's it going, man? How is just life for you watching just an exciting young Grizzlies team?
It's fun, man. It is fun to watch good basketball, you know, watch an exciting player in John Morant on a nightly basis. A lot of those guys, you know, Brandon Clark, super fun to watch, lots of dunks. So it's a different style of basketball than what we're used to here in Memphis, but I would say it's a lot more fun to watch.
So what we're here to talk about is JB Bickerstaff. So he, as it broke on Tuesday night, and sort of been assumed and sort of was actually out there that they had a quote unquote succession plan in mind with him when they brought him in as associate head coach. He's going to take over for John Beilein. He obviously, you know, I think he's pretty well respected around the league. His dad obviously is a long time executive and figure in the NBA community. I know he's had a good rapport with the Cavs players this year. But before this, he was the coach of the Grizzlies. I think was two seasons, was also an interim coach there, was previously the interim coach for the Houston Rockets. This has kind of been his thing, although he doesn't have the interim title here. What was he as the coach of the Grizzlies? Like, what were some of the things that sort of defined his tenure there?
You know, JB is a really good guy. Like, he means well. You know, like there are a lot of good qualities about him. Unfortunately, a lot of those, for me, in terms of what we saw at the Grizzlies, didn't translate to the floor all the time. You know, it was JB is a guy that he sticks to his guns. If he has a rotation that he thinks works, even if everyone in the world tells you it doesn't, or every analytics could point to you it doesn't, he'll stick to that. And so, you know, that can be really frustrating. Honestly, he was an interim coach of the Grizzlies and then a full-time head coach for 1 year. So I never saw it work out for him in terms of whatever he was sticking to. But, you know, that can be said for someone about, you know, that does live life that way, that sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Unfortunately, with the Grizzlies, you know, we never really saw anything that was beneficial from that particular motivation style in terms of the basketball court. And he's a great guy. I mean, he's fun to talk to. And he's a super smart guy and really knowledgeable about the game. But it just seems like, you know, like you mentioned, he was an interim coach with the Grizzlies, interim coach with Houston. He's never really gotten it to work. And so, you know, he had a losing record with the Houston Rockets when he had the interim tag. He had a losing record with the Grizzlies, interim coach, and as a full-time coach. Not that the Grizzlies roster was great then. It was not good at all. Like, I don't get me wrong. He didn't have a lot to work with, you know, but at the same time, I think there are a lot of questions in terms of his coaching style that people had over and over again that never really seemed to be corrected, which ended up leading to him being fired.
Well, I know, like, the Mike Conley thing and his kind of situation last year was Jaren Jackson Jr.'s rookie year. We talked about this on your podcast, but, like, the fact that, like, it seems like Jaren Jackson Jr. just, like, didn't have a green light with him, and then, like, did under Taylor Jenkins, which, like, obviously Jenkins is a Budenholzer acolyte, so, like, there's something there, just that change of the DNA. But in your mind, when you were watching him coach Memphis last year, and even with the weird roster and just kind of everything that was going on, this is obviously pre Ja Morant for them and just the energy he's brought to that team. Did he have like a core philosophy as a coach? Like, obviously you mentioned stick to his guns, but is there like something he, on either offense or defense, that he was like sort of designing or wanted to do that, you know, was kind of defined in terms of the style of play he wanted?
I mean, he's a defense first guy. Like, he is good at that. Like, he is good in terms of defensive schemes. You know, so that's something you'll probably see him put his emphasis on. I want to say that the Grizzlies had like a top 10 defensive rating last year. So, you know, there were times when they would win games just because of defense. The problem that would stem from JB is that his offense was just not, I think, where in terms of Taylor Jenkins' offense, you've seen just year one, he has installed a really good free-flowing offense. And the Grizzlies' offense under JB, it would stall a lot. I mean, it would just – a lot of times it would just – didn't get to where you needed to be. And whether that was personnel, you know, it was this weird transition with, you know, Mike Conley, Marc Gasol still there. Marc with the first part of the year, and then he got traded to Toronto. Like, there was this weird, you know, year where he had lots of different personnel. I want to say that was like 20 players on the roster last year, maybe 23, something like that, like a lot of different players. So, and not a whole lot of great ones. And so, you know, whether that's to be said about personnel in terms of his offense, I don't know. You know, I can't really say, because he didn't have Ja Morant, you know, and obviously you guys, you know, as well as anybody else, if you have good players in this league, if your roster is fantastic, you know, you could put me and you out there on the sideline, and in the heyday of the Golden State Warriors, we could win 30 games and just say, hey, guys, go play basketball. And so whether he has a good roster or not, I think it's obviously that's huge in terms of what he's trying to do. But when he was with the Grizzlies, you know, defense was his calling card, but the offense just always lacked creativity.
So for you, and seeing that he, I mean, just seeing what has happened here since he gets fired by Memphis, is brought in by the Cavs, and is now the Cavs head coach, you know, 44 games or whatever after he was the associate head coach and was running the defense and that stuff, which, you know, fits with what your, you know, his kind of his profile. What do you just make of him being a head coach again so fast and being the head coach of this particular team, which is, you know, in a weird spot? A lot of young guys. Some veterans that you kind of got to figure out what's exactly going to go on with them, like Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, Andre Drummond. But what do you make of just him as the coach on this particular team?
You know, I will say this, and it's something I said with the Grizzlies when he had the interim tag, they literally just promoted him and that was it. And it's always under the assumption that you should always go out and look for a head coach, whether that's, you know, giving it Aaron Sag and looking through this through the course of the rest of the year. I'm never a fan of just saying, hey, it's your team, especially when you're giving a guy a team that has literally never won ever at any place he's ever been at. And so whether that's Aaron or head coach, he's never won. And so, and he's never shown that he is a competent head coach. And so I'm always wary of if any franchise, and the Grizzlies were, I was very, very vocal about this when they hired him then, is that, look, you know, look, we're hiring somebody that you didn't even have a coaching search. If you go out and have a coaching search and then you come back to JB and say, hey, this is the best guy we got, then that's just it. And that's fine. That's great. And so I think it would behoove the Cavaliers if they would have, you know, gone out and did their own thing, just like it would have, you know, probably done the same thing for the Grizzlies if they had gone out and had a coaching search. But they didn't do that, and now here you are with the coaching of JB Bickerstaff. But I think it'll be interesting. He is a guy that, you know, is well liked with players. You know, if the locker room likes him, they usually stick up for him. And so, you know, there are times where that is beneficial for you for sure. I think that's important. To obviously be well liked by your players, but they want a player for you, and so I think you have a lot of young guys there. If they want to play for the coach, if they understand what he's trying to do, because so many times if players just don't like what the coach is saying or they don't like the offense they're trying to install, they just won't run it right, or they won't, or effectively won't be up to its full potential. And so I think you have a lot going for you in terms of just him being a player's coach. Like you mentioned, some of the players are already liking him. That can go a long way with young players in just terms of what they're able to do and how far they're willing to go for that coach, or how far they're willing to understand or stay late nights, practice, any of those type of things. That can go a long way. So I think that you probably have that, you know, on your side starting out.
Last thing we'll touch on here. What was he like with young guys last year? Obviously, maybe not as many as they have this year, but what was he just like with the young Grizzlies that were obviously going to be trying to be developed last year when he was with the full-time head coach?
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty good with the guys. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of young guys in the Grizzlies last year either. So there was just Jaren, really, and truthfully, and Dylan. But Dylan got hurt and wasn't really around the team. After he got hurt, he missed almost the entire year. So really and truthfully, there wasn't a whole lot for him to kind of coach up and be around. It was just Jaren. And, you know, I think that there were some differences in terms of how Jaren should play. You know, Jaren's not a post guy. And I think there was a lot of him trying to be a post guy last year. Towards the end of the year, middle part of the end of the year, you saw a lot more of Jaren driving from the wing, which is obviously still not his strong suit, but it's better than him being on the post. Like, that is a better look for Jaren Jackson Jr. driving from the wing, because he's so lengthy and he can do that better than most people think. So, you know, for Jaren, he was good with him. Again, a lot of those guys, they like JB. And so I think that's just kind of starting block one is do you like each other? And I know that sounds trivial, but it's the truth in all walks of life. And so I think that he did good with Jaren over the course of the year, but it took some time to get there.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see how this plays out. If you were, what is there something about what just kind of how he's going to look at this and what kind of situation he's joining that intrigues you from the outside looking in? Is there anything you'd be like, okay, this is an aspect of this, I want to see how it plays out?
I'm honestly interested to see what happens with, you know, how he uses Kevin Love, what he does with Kevin Love. Like, what is that relationship like, you know, in terms of what they do with him? So I think that will be interesting to see. But yeah, just how he molds those young guys. Like, what you have a group of guys that, you know, especially young in the league, they don't have a lot of other opinions. They haven't been to other coaching staffs or other franchises and said, well, this is how we do over here, you should do it this way. There aren't a whole lot of that going on, so you can really mold young players into what you want them to be. And so I think that will be the most interesting thing is how do you get them A, on your side, and B, going. I mean, when coaches make a change in the league, there was a coaching change, there's always like that week and a half of like the honeymoon period where it's just really good, the players just playing really free. Like, there's always that. And then after that is what you really have to look for. Like, what happens then once the system is installed, or once the system he wants to have is installed, where does it go from there? So that's probably the two things I'll look at the most.
You can find Mark on Twitter, I believe at King_producer. Check out Locked On Grizzlies if you want everything about going on in Memphis. If you need a kind of a palate cleanser, please go check that podcast out and learn all about what's going on with Ja, Jaren Jackson Jr., and the Taylor Jenkins era Grizzlies. Mark, thank you so much for coming on Locked On Cavs.
Yeah, man, anytime.